Ben and Tiki on the fan. Sean and Loogie here with you. Rosie and Scones across the way as well. Patrick Corbin and Max Fried tonight in Texas. Coverage comes your way starting around 7:30 here on the fan. Emmanuel Barbari already stewing out in the newsroom, pumped up for a good pregame. He's actually got you earlier after us at 6:30. He'll be bridging the gap to Yankees pregame as well. And I don't think I have to understate this. The Yankees are going to play more important games, hopefully, the rest of the way than tonight. But when your ace is going and the Texas Rangers are now nipping on your heels of a wild card, and you've just been swept by the Marlins, tonight now becomes one of those nights like they've had versus the Blue Jays over the last month. I believe it is the biggest game of the Yankee season to date. You do not want to now have a bad week in Texas that finds you out of the playoffs, which is on the table when you consider where Texas is and where the Yankees are and what has become a tight American League. From the one seed being tied with the Tigers and Blue Jays, Yankees are only 4.5 games back of that, but they're basically a game and a half out of being out of the playoffs. So everything from out of the playoffs to the number one seed in the American League is essentially separated by 6 games, which is going to create chaos the last 2 months. It is a big, big start tonight for Max Fried, 12-4 on the year, 2.62 ERA, as you see on SNY, which leads us to Cinco de 5-0.
Cinco de 5-0 with Evan and Tiki on the fan.
Cinco de 5-0 is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything, everywhere. So in the opening segment, we discussed the Yankees issues and Jazz and the Aaron Boone and the accountability and all that went into it. But my statement was, unlike these other series where I screamed and yelled and talked about how much this team stinks, I do acknowledge there's 2 months left in the season. And this team is a team that was just all in less than a week ago on the trade deadline, so to speak, with the bullpen arms. This series versus the Marlins has to be the last rock bottom, no pun intended for the wrestling world, of the Yankee season. And usually when a team hits rock bottom, that's it. They've hit rock bottom, they rise back up. Unfortunately, the Yankees have had multiple rock bottoms this year where they thought they would rebound. So what are the top 5 rock bottoms of the Yankee season so far? Or bottom 5. Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go!
Number 5.
How about to end the first half of the season before the All-Star break? They win those 4 in a row versus the Mariners. How do they respond after that? That Saturday and Sunday, 2 straight losses to the Cubs to end the first half. They went womp, womp, womp into the All-Star break. And it felt like that kind of drained some momentum that they had built back up when they had beat the bricks off the Mariners.
Yeah, they had that Friday night, too, where I feel like they scored a lot of runs.
Yeah, Bellinger had the... Was it
3 homers?
3 homers.
I think
could have been
3
4
homers in that game. And then they scored maybe like 1 run combined on Saturday and Sunday, and they went into the break on a whimper.
Yep, that was number 5. All right, here we go.
Number 4.
This is a 1-game rock bottom, but it was our first true warning sign of the Yankees. Saturday, May 31st. Some remember that as Knicks elimination night.
You didn't have to.
Others remember it as the night the Yankees lost to the Dodgers 18-2 on 2 solo King Judge homers. They lost.
Right.
Now, that officially declared the series was a loss to the Dodgers. That was 2 straight. But the Yankees losing 18-2 to the team that beat them in the World Series in late May was our first sign that that was a rock bottom. Oh, you can't get blown out like that again. And they've had many other problems since.
Yeah, it looked like, men against boys there. They just looked like they weren't even in the league of the Dodgers. They were humiliated that night, for sure.
All right, here we go.
Number 3.
The beginning of the Boone June swoon, some have said. June 13th to 16th, the Yankees are swept 3 games by the Boston Red Sox. Don't look now, those games matter. Boston's giving them a honk and a wave, passing them in the standings. It was then followed by 3 straight losses to the Angels, a 6-game losing streak for the Yankees, and again started the Red Sox comeback in the standings. The Yankees ended up winning a Thursday afternoon game that stopped the bleeding, but those 6 losses really set in motion what became pathetic baseball that's really existed since June 13th.
Yeah, and at the time, it didn't seem like much with the Red Sox because they hadn't really woken up from their slumber yet. But now that they've traded Devers, and it was a team that I was very high on, I think in our predictions before the season, I had them winning the division. I have to go back and double check that. But I knew that the Red Sox would be dangerous this season, and we're certainly seeing that, before the All-Star break and certainly post-All-Star break.
All right, here we go.
Number 2.
Number 2 is yesterday. Getting swept by the Florida, Miami, whatever you want to call them, freaking Marlins, off of that trade deadline where the Yankee fans were back beating their chest, allowing Boston to pass them once and for all. that felt like a rock bottom, but shockingly is not the first rock bottom.
Yeah, I'm curious. I think I know where you're going with this, but in my opinion, Friday night was the Yankees' worst loss of the season. So I'm a little surprised that you don't have that as the rock bottom, but I will let it go if you have number one what I think it's going to be.
All right, here we go.
Number one.
It's the last day of June, first 3 days of July, where the Yankees were swept in four games up in Toronto. Remember, the Yankees entered that series still in first place. Mm-hmm. They have not seen first place since losing four straight. Max Fried had a bad start up there as well. That four-game sweep in Toronto was brutal. They then piggybacked that with two losses in a row to the Mets before they righted the ship on the Bellinger catch. But that was another six-game losing streak that was thrown in there. So that's why yesterday, when everybody goes and screams and yells, that's why maybe I came in more calmer than usual, Tommy. Think about that. The Yankees have had how many of those moments this year that have frustrated the hell out of you? And shockingly, yesterday's three-game sweep was not the worst.
Yeah, and I think that the ones against Toronto and now looking back on it against Boston are going to sting more. They're in division. It allows Toronto to take the season series, and so they have the tiebreaker on you. So the ones against Miami who have played really well, and it sucks, and I still think Friday night was the worst loss of the season because of the momentum they had from the Tampa series and the trade deadline, and then all the new acquisitions were bad, or certainly not all of them, obviously, McMahon, but the ones they got the day before just all flamed out in epic proportion. That felt like the worst loss of the season. But the moments in Toronto, I think, highlight why the Yankees are in the position they're in. It just feels like Toronto plays with more urgency. They don't fear the Yankees on any level, and the Yankees in those games just make a million mistakes, and you realize that there is just a pretty decent gap between the two teams.
Now, what scares me more, and that was Cinco de Fivo today and every day, a question has been asked, what can get the Yankees out of this and going right? Mm-hmm. The Yankees have had moments, right? Like, all the reason they have five rock bottoms means they have responded at some point to end it. We brought up the idea of losing 18-2 to the Dodgers. Well, the Yankees ended up winning a game on that Sunday that kind of breathed a sigh of relief. We brought up the six-game sweep in mid-June. Well, the Yankees beat the Angels in that last game that had a decent weekend after that. The four-game sweep followed by the games versus the Mets, they win that Sunday game, and then they get hot. Mm-hmm. The Cubs, at the end of the first half, they had beaten the Mariners those couple times, and they came out. Remember, nobody thought they were going to win that Saturday game versus Atlanta after the All-Star break, and they found a way to get that done on David Wright Day. The Yankees have responded, which is why tonight, with Max Fried on the mound, I know that Texas is playing well. My full anticipation, you see on SNY, 18-27 since that June 13th mark, the second worst record in the AL. I think the Yankees are going to have a good week in Texas. I do. I think Max Fried's going to give them a good start. The Yankees are going to beat their chest. There might be a game in this series where they score 10 runs or something like that. I also think you're going to get good Bednar and good Doval now as they got kind of their feet under them after that implosion on Friday night. And will the Yankees have another one of these series like they just had this weekend the rest of the year? My gut tells me they probably will. They probably will. But with King Judge returning tomorrow, I think that will give them a jolt of energy. My expectation off of the Marlins series is the Yankees find a way here to build a little mojo and a little momentum. And then guess what? You know what we're going to be talking about Thursday and Friday, right? Yankees, Houston, to, you know, have a big, big Carlos Correa kind of weekend. He hit a home run, by the way, yesterday. And see if the Yankees find maybe a little of that mystique. And maybe the Astros are the team this weekend that rejuvenates the Yankees and they feel a sense of importance in big October-like baseball. We can only hope, but that's all we could point to because right now it feels like every time the Yankees respond with something good, something bad is again around the corner.
Yeah, based on the season that they've had, if what you're saying comes to fruition and the Yankees have a good series in Texas against the Rangers, we know what's waiting for them this weekend, and I think the Astros do what they always do to the Yankees, or more often than not have done to the Yankees, and that's kind of get them back down to earth and humble them. That's just the feel of this season. You're right. It's been stop, start, stop, start. And even if they do have a good series, and they probably should. I mean, you have Fried on the mound, so in theory, you win tonight. In theory. And I know Evaldi's pitching one of these games, I think on Wednesday for Texas. Yeah. So, and Texas has played good baseball, but the Yankees always do enough to just sort of right the ship. But what I need to see from them, and I think what everybody needs to see from them, is, you know, Freak could go out there and pitch a great game. You know, the King can come back and hit a bunch of home runs and be an elite baseball player. I need to see the mistakes they make
every
night.
Yeah, series. How about that?
Or at least, you know, cut it down a little bit where they're not as many. And then you start to think, all right, now they're truly turning the corner. They won't really turn that corner and put themselves, at least in my mind, in the conversation as a team that could win a championship until they cut down overwhelming majority of their mental boneheaded mistakes.
We do have a Yankee lineup tonight.
All right. Who's leading off?
That's Paul all I care about. Goldschmidt will lead off at first base. Don't necessarily love that.
I love it.
Ahmed Rosario will bat second and play right field tonight. Cody Bellinger bats third in center field.
Before you say that, this is a game we've played on the fan before. It's called If I Had Told You.
Oh, the lineup?
If I had told you back in, I don't even know, January, February, that we'd be sitting here on August 4th, and the Yankee lineup, the first two hitters in the lineup would be Paul Goldschmidt and Ahmed Rosario. What would you?
How did that happen?
Exactly. But that just, and that's nothing against those guys. It's just, and they went into the year without really a clear cut leadoff hitter, and they haven't developed one at all, which is another part of their issues. They can't have a set lineup day in, day out. But Goldschmidt and Rosario are the first two in the order here.
Okay. And keep in mind, you're facing a lefty in Patrick Corbin. So this is the Yankee lefty lineup they envisioned when the trade deadline came and passed. So Goldschmidt, Rosario, Bellinger. Giancarlo is cleaning up DHing. Austin Slater is hitting fifth in this lineup. Hey, all I heard is about how much this guy mashed lefties with the White Sox. You're betting fifth in this Yankee order. Yahtzee tonight, as Paulie would say. Maybe it's an Austin Slater home run spot.
I was thinking maybe that should be our bet tonight.
An Austin Slater home run?
Only because of the way you reacted to it. And no disrespect to an Austin Slater, but I would imagine the overwhelming part of our audience when they heard the Yankees were acquiring Austin. Yeah, they were thinking, AC Slater? I mean, who are we getting here?
But they claim he mashes lefty. So we'll see. He bats fifth tonight. Jazz bats sixth. Yep. He doesn't deserve to sit ever. Anthony Volpe, your shortstop. Boy, you talk about just putting guys you're frustrated with back-to-back. Batting seventh, Austin Wells catches, batting eighth, and Jose Caballero will be the third baseman in batting ninth, meaning Ryan McMahon is out of the lineup. Another guy struggles versus left. So no Dominguez, no Grisham, no McMahon, no Rice. That's your bench tonight.
And
pretty
good
bench.
Could this be the last we see of a Caballero when
they just traded for him?
I mean,
you got to send a bullpen arm down.
Does he have options to get sent down?
He has one option.
So there's got to be a roster move.
You don't
here.
Make the trade for Caballero and send him down. That would be, what does Brian Cashman think?
I mean, you certainly wouldn't put him in right field if you were looking to get rid of him and he was on the chopping block.
I'll say this. He better
that
play
would probably be not.
A clean third base.
Let's just put a pin in that if Caballero gets sent down.
Somebody's got to go down. It's got to be a bullpen home. You're going to send one of these bench pieces down? You just made all these trades.
I mean, you do have Rosario that you made him. They do have a bunch of players. I'm just speculating.
You can't lose that flexibility if Judge and Giancarlo are basically just DHs.
But do you want to give up any kind of arm in the pen right now?
You just got deeper in the pen.
I know that, but you lose your depth if you start to send guys down.
The Johnny Loaisiga over the weekend gets put on the IL.
Oh, you think a mental break?
That's his,
That's a take a couple weeks.
Insert comment here. Okay, the guy has struggled. That sounded like we don't want to waste an option on somebody or DFA somebody, risk losing them. That didn't pass the sniff test for me. All right, and as I said, Max Fried on the mound tonight. If the Yankees do lose tonight, you know what you call that, Loogie?
If the Yankees lose tonight, what do we call
quick.
It, Loogie?
What do you call it?
I don't know.
A Fried pickle. 888-808-1019. And we did ask Sal Licata, but we did not, instead of a fried pickle. You're in a pickle? A Fried pickle. Sal Licata, we asked, is the NL East over? We didn't have it recorded. His simple answer, no commentary, was no.
That's all right.
That
I asked him.
That's what we got out of it.
Yep.
Nick in Oldbridge. Nick, what's up?
Oh, what's up, guys? I'm going to agree with you. Stephen Kwan, not a superstar. I think he's been propped up a little bit. But he's hitting .319 against lefties. I don't understand why we don't move Spencer Jones from him. Jones is only 2.5 years younger than him.
I know.
Guys. Like, why are we calling him up? Why are we moving him?
Think,
I don't
Nick,
understand.
Nick, they think Spencer Jones is going to be the center field version of Aaron Judge, King Aaron Judge. That's why.
And he's been tearing it up. In AAA, I don't know if I would have given up Jones. Unless it was Kwan's an all-star, but like a really elite game-changing
Kwan
player.
Would fit the Yankees. Like he would be something that they have not had. I'm not anti-Stephen Kwan. I get not trading Spencer Jones, but here's what has to happen next year. Spencer Jones, I don't care if you re-sign Grisham. He is playing every day. He is getting the same leash that Anthony Volpe got in his rookie year. If you are not willing to move a guy that is now aging as a prospect and you think he's the goods, then next year he comes up. Nobody better be blocking him. And he better play every single day. And even when he goes through his lulls, which he will as a major league hitter, he better continue to play. Otherwise, you have no excuse why you didn't move him for a win-now move. Andrew in Brooklyn. Andrew, what's up?
Hey, guys. Marsh, why are you always fat-shaming these sports guys?
Yeah, why are you always doing that?
First it was Juan Soto.
Yep.
You say he gained a little weight.
I'm not fat-shaming. I'm just pointing out. Takes one to know one, right?
Yeah, Debo. Yeah.
No, man. You know, you're not fat, bro. You're just big bone.
Sure.
I appreciate that.
A very, very big
Andrew,
bone.
Yeah, Andrew, I never want to insult the fat community.
The fat community, they're called.
Look, okay. There are people that aren't comfortable in their own skin, and I hope that I could be a spokesperson for them. I hope that people turn on SMY and go, look, if that guy with a beard that looks like a thumb and is overweight can succeed in life, hopefully I can too.
Look at
Kate from This Is Us. She just shined in that Netflix show, The Hunting Wives.
I understand that. But just because you have no...
We're inspirations to people.
You think you're an inspiration to people.
Yeah,
that's where you have now wrapped your head around the idea that because you are, your words not mine, overweight, we'll call it now.
Yeah.
Big bone, husky.
I'm less overweight than I was, but I'm still overweight.
Porky, what word do you like the most? Which word makes
Porky's.
You feel
comfortable?
That feels very
good. Yeah, it feels offensive.
Even when I said it, I was like, I didn't
like
that.
I used to like husky. Like, there was a certain...
That's a dog, though.
No, but there was a certain gravitas to being younger and your mom taking you to the husky section to buy pants where you were like, oh, that feels fit. It feels tougher.
Okay. You being a husky person most of your life, you feel now that you are somehow an inspiration for those that look like you because you have made it in the sports talk radio world. That's what you're... Like, you're
if there's one... 14-year-old kid out there who's a sports fan who maybe doesn't feel great about the way they look or they're overweight, and they can look at me on TV and go, I could be him one day.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, that's life-changing, and I appreciate
respect,
that I could do that for people.
I mean, you haven't... I don't see you...
There's enough skinny people in the world. Like, TV's all about glamour or whatever.
We're on TV, but we're not on TV. You didn't have to overcome a major challenge, though, to get where you are.
Sure I did.
What challenge would that be?
What do you mean? People like good-looking people with cameras on them.
We're on the radio.
What about our digital team? I'm on all these digital
videos.
When
we started here...
Tommy. You don't get it. Unless you've been heavy at any point in your life. I'm an inspiration to others, and I appreciate that. I like
just because you look like Darth Vader when he took the helmet off.
Is that nice?
No. But
I was heavy. I was 230 at one point in my
230
life.
230, Scones?
Yeah, I was a center on the football team next to Giannotti.
And so then you've lived a life, Scones.
Yes, and I'd rather be thin. Than be Sean Marash. Sorry.
Thank you.
You're an inspiration.
I'd rather be thin.
I would too.
230 for Scones. Yeah. I didn't realize you was.
Yeah.
That,
oh yeah. Back in the day,
Sal was fat too.
I lost 70 pounds between junior and senior year of high school.
That's why when Juan Soto looked a little hefty in his press conference, it wasn't an insult. He should have embraced that he had gained weight and been an inspiration.
Right, but it's not 1990 where your third hitter has a pot belly, rips heaters, and goes to the strip club. You'd probably want, like, now people think Pete Alonso's fat. We grew up back in the day where it was, you know, Rob Deere and John Kruk were first basemen. Those guys were putting on some weight. But this idea, again, that you're somehow, I can't get past this, that you, Sean Marash, and first of all, you're not even the first husky person to make it in the business. So this idea that
we all can't be inspirations?
You're saying you're an inspiration to the pleasantly plump people
of
sports radio.
But what did you overcome?
Being fat.
So you're implying or insinuating that you wouldn't have made it in this business because someone will look at you and go, because he's heavy, we're not going to give him a gig?
Yeah, if he's not so nice to look at, sure.
We're talking. It's not a beauty pageant. I mean, if that was the case, then
Tommy,
Evan would have been a CPA.
He
would have been like his daddy, would have been an accountant.
You're throwing stones from a very skinny house, and you don't understand go through.
Okay, here we go. Now you're going to lay it on thick.
Wait. No, and I would also say this. You're saying you can't believe what came out of my mouth. You've called yourself a generational talent going on 2 years.
Well, I mean,
what generation is that?
Other people call me that. I mean, I would, it's self-proclaimed, but other people add on the fact. Again, I go back to the idea that the young child listening right now or watching and see, or they come up to you at Fanatics Fest and they see you maybe a little, I mean, you've lost weight. I'll give you that. I'm
45
sure
pounds.
I'm sure you'll find it, but I think that's the second time I made that joke. All right. I promise I won't make it a third time. They're going to look at you and view you as an inspiration?
Listen to me. The 11-year-old sports fan that listens to this station in the back of the dad's car that maybe grabs their hand for an extra Twix on Halloween day in that bucket, they look at me and go, it's okay to have this Twix. Sean Morash made it.
Well, I also think you've used that to your advantage throughout your entire career, which is props to you.
We're not writing a biography about me.
I'm just saying you've used it.
I'm not Walter Cronkite.
You've used it. Wait, can you say that last name again?
Cronkite.
Yeah, I butchered that a couple times over in the weekend. But you're inspirational. You're not Nelson Mandela. I mean, you're walking around.
You'd be shocked,
man. Okay, got it.
You'd be shocked. Carl in Staten Island. Carl, what's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? Just want your opinion about the Mets. I think they dropped the ball by not getting a legit starter. Montas stinks.
Clearly.
Clay Holmes. Yeah, Clay Holmes is, you know, I mean, he's good, but he's really a reliever. He's not a starter.
I'm with you.
That last part's not fair.
I think if and when the Mets stage of elimination comes, we will look back and say that starting rotation didn't scare anybody. And I think the Mets' number one priority in this offseason is going to be finding a legitimate top-end starter. Not Kodai Senga, who needs a six-man rotation. And I like the upside of Peterson. They're not deep enough in the rotation.
Well, I don't want to... upside, I mean, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball over the last year, so he's clearly... It's not just upside. Minaya has been good. Senga, we know what he can be. And as far as trading for a pitcher, there just weren't that many pitchers that were dealt. Did you want a Charlie Morton?
No,
was there anybody that really
tickled
your fancy?
It's not one thing
to just say they should have, but not a lot of pitchers got dealt starting pitchers. Relievers did, and they got a couple of elite ones.
I'm not getting on David Stearns for that, the same way I'm not getting on Cashman. The market ended up dictating that was very hard to come by. So I think it's ultimately where we talk about how the Yankees ultimately will get eliminated, right? Volpe will make a throwing error. They'll get caught off the bases. The Mets, inevitably, if they don't win a World Series, they will lose a series because they haven't driven in a couple runners in scoring position. They don't get enough quality starting pitching that goes deep enough into some of these playoff games. Usually the 162 tells the story. You could envision the story on how each of these teams' season will end in the postseason.
Two things before we go to break. Number one, you're not inspirational.
You're still on this?
I promise you.
They moved on to baseball.
I promise you schools will not be closed on your birthday. So I can make that promise.
Really bothering you, huh?
That's number one. Number two, speaking of wrestling and food, we've talked about that a lot. We discussed eggplant parmesan earlier, correct? Right?
Okay. Yes.
So a fella named Victor tweeted at me, you got to try the eggplant parmesan from this place. It's Pete's Pizza in Bay Ridge. Okay. He tagged me in the tweet at Tommy Lugauer, and I believe he tried to tag you in the tweet at Sean Morash. Mm-hmm. The only problem is he didn't tag you. He tagged Shawn Michaels.
Oh, so Shawn Michaels, maybe get a nice eggplant.
If you're Shawn Michaels and you're going through your mentions right now, you're saying, who the hell is Tommy Lugauer? And why the heck is this guy telling me to have that eggplant parmesan at Pete's Pizza in Bay Ridge?
Hard to be a sexy boy if you're just eating eggplant
parm. Okay, I set you up for that horrible joke. You got it.
Another hour or so, then Emmanuel Barbari will come your way, and he will take you up until Yankees baseball. Big game tonight with the Texas Rangers. King Aaron Judge might be rejoining the team tomorrow, if not Wednesday. I'll just say this, Tommy. There are murmurs, let's call him. Call it. Murmurs. That the Yankees, faced with a decision when King Aaron Judge gets activated, might send down with one option, Jose Caballero.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to before
now,
the break.
And then bring him back September 1st, I guess, if that happened. All I'll say is this.
Come on.
With the way we've complained about the Yankee roster construction, I just searched the rules here on the 26-man roster. There's no rule on how little amount of pitchers, unless I'm reading this wrong, it's a limit of 13 pitchers. The Yankees have the five starters, okay? And going through the bullpen right now, you have all the guys that we've talked about, Doval, Bednar, Bird, right? Obviously Weaver and Dominguez. I'm going up and down this. They have Hedrick, who's pitched better of late, although he, you know, gave up the homer. And they have JT Brubaker. You do not need both of those guys on the roster with the deepness of the bullpen, while now having a team with Stanton and Judge, neither of which could basically play the field. If they do that, that is just malpractice and trying to manufacture using an option that Caballero has. You just traded for the guy and deemed him important enough to play in right field. So something to keep an eye on. When the Yankees do activate King Aaron Judge, and remember, this is still a team with, in essence, Fernando Cruz on the way back and Mark Leiter. A team that is struggling this bad shouldn't have that many unanswered questions as far as, wow, are we really going to lose that guy? It makes almost losing these games more crazy. But Brubaker and Hedrick on this team, to make sure you have two DHs activated to send down Caballero? I mean, that would just be idiotic. But let's see. Keep an eye on it. Little pin. Remember, you know, where you heard first, if you're surprised or not surprised, what happens with the Yankees as King Aaron Judge makes his way back. Now, I did tease earlier a thought on the NFL preseason. This weekend coming up, Saturday afternoon, the Giants will play the Buffalo Bills. The Jets will play on Saturday night. I actually forgot who the Jets are playing Saturday night.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
I don't know if it necessarily matters. No. Jets play Saturday night. So we're going to get our
first taste.
They play the Packers. First taste of preseason football. The Giants and Jets will then have two joint practices next week before they play each other in the annual tussle on next Saturday night.
Yep.
All right?
Yep.
A lot has been made about what the teams are going to do in the preseason, and it's going to pick up steam here in the next couple days. You're going to hear a lot of it. The coaches are starting to get asked about it. We expect, from a Giant perspective, plenty of Jackson Dart, right? You want to see what the rookie quarterback has to offer.
Of course.
That's when these guys play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I have settled on this take and this opinion. The Giants last year, what did we say at this time? If the Giants were going to have a season, the first two games of the season were going to tell the story. They were not ready. They were embarrassed. They were, dare I say, pantsed by the Minnesota Vikings with that 100-year anniversary game with those ugly uniforms. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They then went out with basically no kicker and lost to Washington. I believe that was the Week 2 game.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then lost that Thursday nighter with Dallas after beating Cleveland in Week 3.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
But they started off 0-2, and it told the story of the season.
Yeah, 1-3, 0-2, yeah.
2 years ago, coming off the playoff year,
mm-hmm.
they basically didn't get off the bus the moment that field goal was blocked versus Dallas. They were so unprepared, and it set back a season.
Yep.
The Giants under Brian Daboll, outside of that Tennessee game in 2022, have gotten off to horrible starts, which have set the tone for horrible seasons. The Giants and this team under Brian Daboll, albeit a different roster now that seems to be more talented, have looked unprepared to start seasons. The Giants play a Week 3 game versus the Kansas City Chiefs. The Giants play a Week 4 game versus a Charger team that can run the ball down your throats if stopping the run is your one weakness on defense. You look at the Commanders. Oh, is Terry McLaurin going to play? Are they going to take a step back? You look at Dallas and all the nonsense that's gone on there, including offensive line injuries. The Giants, if there is any prayer of a season versus this tough schedule, once again are faced with the same question they were faced with a year ago. They cannot start 0-2, Tommy. So what does that mean? I think anybody not named Dexter Lawrence on the New York Football Giants needs to play quality reps in the preseason. Now, what does that mean?
Yeah, define that.
You want to sit in the entire third game and give yourself 2 weeks healthy to get ready? Mm-hmm. Fine. Maybe you view the third game as the dress rehearsal like we used to because you have the bye week, the fourth game. That's fine. The Giants, and this includes Russell Wilson, by the way, starters need to see the field. I'm not telling you need to see the field in all three games. But I think two of the three games, these guys need to feel hits. They need to feel contact. If it's two series in each of those two games, that's fine too. The Giants treating their team like country club. Maybe it was because of the lack of depth and not getting out there to feel the pressure, feel the hits. I'm sorry, they were unprepared. I've seen Patrick Mahomes play preseason games the last couple of years in Kansas City. Treat the beginning of the season with urgency. So we're going to find out in a couple days whether some of these starters are going to play versus the Buffalo Bills. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. If they do not, joint practices be damned. There is no excuse for the Giants not to, and I'm leaving Dexter Lawrence out because I do believe that's a bubble wrap guy that doesn't need it. I don't get Brian Burns, Abdul Carter. We should see these pass rushers come at him in waves. The young secondary guys should absolutely be out there.
Tracy, Scadaboo.
The offensive line. What do we hear about offensive line? They need the chemistry. They need the gel. They should absolutely be out there.
Besides Thomas. But
okay, but even
if he's even ready, which he's not probably going
to
be.
But Thomas, I even think when he gets to the third preseason game, if he's anticipating playing, I would play him too because you don't want him stepping on a field for the first time with the foot injury and playing there. I would even make a case for him to play with that offensive line and get cohesion. I think it's paramount this year more than any other year, knowing how difficult the schedule is, that the Giants leave no excuse behind on being prepared to start this year. Dable's going to answer this. Giants should absolutely be playing starters in the preseason in two of these three games. How long you want to do it for? Be my guest to turn. I'm not telling you need to go out there and run laps into the third quarter of games. But get out there, get a feel versus a couple teams. Furthermore, the Jets, Aaron Glenn, you want to talk about you're the freaking New York Jets? Be about it. The Jets are another roster that hasn't exactly earned the right to be sitting in the preseason. They need all the chemistry and all the installation they need. I would do it if I was Aaron Glenn with the Jets, too. Usually, I had swayed the other way. I'd become wrap everybody in bubble wrap. I even made that joke about, you know, last week, Cinco, right? Wrap guys in bubble wrap.
Yep.
I don't think it's the case with these two teams knowing where they are now. I think you need to see starters play for these teams and get a feel for it and not look as unprepared as we've seen, specifically the Giants, the last 2 years to start a season.
Yeah, and for the from the Giants' perspective, it behooves Dable for sure for this team to get off to a fast start. Look, they got humiliated the last 2 week ones, and I was for sure that they would win last year because I felt like it was a homecoming game, you know, the 100th year of the Giants, and John Mara was hosting all these great Giant legends and their families. Now, Minnesota ended up having a great year. The Giants obviously didn't, so in hindsight, my feel on the game looks bad, but I really thought we'd get a big-time effort here, and we didn't. And you're right, they've gotten off to bad starts under Dable, and now you have a new quarterback, and he's trying to figure out his way with his new team. They should be playing a lot. As much as I want to see Dart and a lot of Dart, Russ and Jameis, they should be getting more reps because the last thing this regime needs, because you know the Sharks will be circling too, and you want to tell me it's not a distraction, it is. You don't want to be answering questions. If this team starts goes 0-2 to start the season, the questions are going to start. What about job security? What about Jackson Dart? And any chance you have of, and maybe it's far-fetched, but any chance you have of competing for a playoff spot goes out the window because it all becomes, are you going to keep your job? Is John Mara going to be in a better mood at the end of the season? When are we going to see Jackson Dart? And it might force Dable's hand into going to Dart quicker because he wants to save his butt side and save his fanny and save his job. And that's not the sound strategy going into this season. So normally I'm on the side of caution and I want to keep guys healthy, but I'm with you that the Giants cannot under any circumstances start this season off in Washington and get blown out, get their doors blown out off because it's going to be here we go again with this team and it could spiral out to another 3 or 4 win season. And in that case, unless Jackson Dart shows that he's the goods at the end of the year, Dable and Shane are on the unemployment line.
And it's also a cheap plug. Go to the free Odyssey app and download and subscribe to One Giant Step, hosted by yours truly, and I'll take you throughout the preseason.
I don't understand that one. I don't know what you're doing there.
Well, we're talking Giants. If you want more Giant content,
no, I know. Well, I don't know. I could see where you'd want more Giant
content. Evan pumps the Rico. I'm giving you the One Giant Step pump.
But no, he mentions the Rico. He doesn't do a full blown ad for that.
A full blown ad.
Now, I said, by the way, if you want more Giant content, you can listen to One Giant Step with Sean Marash and the other. You do it with someone. I forgot his name now. I'm teasing. Bryce. You do it with Bryce. That's fine.
Yeah. But you're going to get more X's.
But you pulled a Mr. Perfect there. You threw the ball to yourself for a touchdown. You didn't need to do that.
As I said, inspiration, Tommy. Inspiration. Let's get back to your calls. 888-808-1019. Joey in Woodridge. Joey, what's up, man?
Joe, what's up?
I want to talk about David Stearns and what he's been doing to the Mets lately.
What he's been doing to the Mets. Okay, what do you got?
I'm sick of acting like he's this messiah that's going to save the franchise. What he's done is he's picked up garbage pitchers, and Hefner has fixed them. When you have the budget that he does with Cohen, why not pick up good pitchers?
Well, had they signed Burns, he got Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that's the fear, Joey. I also think Stearns. Met fans don't want to hear this, but a lot like Brian Cashman, answer financially to a boss. And I think the idea that Steve Cohen's rich makes everybody think that he'll just throw money anywhere. Steve Cohen is a Met fan and a baseball fan through and through, too. He has his opinions on what David Stearns should be doing with his money.
And I think, Joey, that when it comes to spending a lot of money, Steve Cohen is there to sign a guy like Juan Soto. You know what I mean? I think he'll be heavily involved when Pete Alonso opts out. My understanding, or just like observing it, is that David Stearns handles the rotation, the pitching lab, Hefner, and signing these guys that other teams don't want. It worked out with Canning. It is, I think, long-term will work out with Clay Holmes once he gets more acclimated to being a starter. It worked with Quintana last year. It worked with Severino last year. I already mentioned Canning this year, Manaea. So overall, the strategy that the Mets have employed with their starting rotation and signing guys and finding guys has worked. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Frankie Montas has pitched well this season. He can pitch better than this. We've seen him pitch better than this in his career. If you want to call up a kid from AAA, I'm all for that. If you want to go to a six-man rotation, I'm all for that. But I have a hard time hearing somebody say, well, what is this David? They went to the NLCS last year, and they've spent the majority of the season in first place. They are absolutely in the best hands they've ever been as far as ownership and GM combined in the modern era, we'll call it. I won't go back to the World Series years, but in the modern era, this is the best shape they've ever been in.
To that point, Tommy, back-to-back years, if your postseason undoing is, you know what, that starting pitching is just not good enough, you're going to have to start answering the bell for
that. Yeah, well, we'll see, because I think last year, you have to remember, Senga was an opener, so you have your best pitcher was in there. Peterson has gotten even better. Manaea ran out of gas last year. I don't expect that to happen because he missed the majority of the season. And your bullpen now, and I understand you got to get there, but the bullpen, even when it got better last year, was still a little bit of an Achilles heel. It is elite 7-8-9 now with Rodgers, Helsley, and Diaz.
I predict the Mets will be very active either via trade or free agency for another frontline starting pitcher in the offseason, because I think ultimately that is why they won't win the World Series this year. And they're going to deepen into the pockets. And where this year was about Juan Soto, next year will be about a starting pitcher. Mario in Long Beach. Mario, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Great call, guys.
Appreciate it. What's going on, man?
Yeah, just a little bit about the Yankees and the Mets. I think they're in a decent position, both of them. Right now, actually, even though the Yankees have issues, really what it is? It's who gets hot at the end of the year. They could turn just all around. And one thing we're not taking, and I think this is going to happen, because I'm a big fan of Judge, and I'm a big fan of Lamar Jackson. Now, why am I saying this? They're both the same players.
The MVPs, playoff failures, yes.
Exactly. And they both will change. They're both going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. And if they both win a couple of championships, they're both all-time greats in both sports. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I think all they need is one championship each, especially in the football world. I think Lamar wins one Super Bowl. He's an all-time great.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think if Judge comes back now and he gets hot, we could throw everything else out of the window.
Sure,
it's going to change everything.
And he's got to stay healthy, though. Mario, thanks for the call. The other thing with King Judge is going to be, we're going to be sitting there every single game hoping he comes out of it all right the rest of the way.
Yeah, I don't think it changes everything. I mean, the guy was hitting well over 400, and the mistakes that they made on the base paths or in the field were still there. He masks some of the problems. He certainly, helps you overcome some of those issues or bails them out.
Yeah.
But, and by the way, Lamar Jackson winning multiple Super Bowls, good luck. That's not happening. I mean, he's in the era of a Josh Allen. And Lamar's great, idea of like Mahomes and Allen and even Judge. I mean, he's now in his early 30s. To win multiple championships is going to be difficult.
Because you win multiple championships, you start having a dynasty conversation. It's
right,
so
but
hard
when you're a
do.
Yankee, you have to be considered as one of the great greats, you have to win a couple of championships to be there with, Ruth and Mantle and Jeter.
I think as generations change and the game changes and more teams are in the playoffs, I think you lower your bar a little bit. I do. I know it's painful for a lot of people to hear.
I don't think
Judge wins one. He's just as great as all-time Yankees. Jeter's.
I disagree. I think when Judge's career is over, if he only has one king, Aaron Judge's career is, I probably owe him a couple bucks today.
I actually think we've been good today.
We've been better than what Evan normally is and what you normally are, but if the king, Aaron Judge, only wins one championship, I think there will be people that try to detract from that.
Nah.
They will say that.
He's going to have...
Is this your first time as a Yankee fan?
Because it's different. His all-time numbers when he finishes, if he continues at this pace, are going to be...
More so! How is this guy only win one championship? He put up all those numbers.
Everybody makes the playoffs now. It's harder to win championships than ever. The Yankees win three or four?
So then what you're telling me is that the years that the Yankees won World Series where there was like five teams in the league, that shouldn't matter? So when I hear about all their rings, I should subtract like 10 of them from the resume that Yankee fans like to hand out?
I think the Yankees have at least one less ring if six teams are in the playoffs every year in Major League Baseball in that dynasty.
What you're talking about the Jeter one.
Yes.
The 90s. I'm talking about back in the day where it was like, how many teams were in the league? And the Yankees were in the,
But only two teams were going. It was a different world.
I understand that. My point is that I understand the era's changed, but the standard and the comparisons are still
Babe Ruth,
multiple titles.
Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio. when those guys got to World Series, they weren't battling through a best of three, then a best of five, then a best of seven, then another best of seven to win the ring. Once they were there, half the work of quote-unquote hitting in the clutch was done. Their clutch was the regular season. Now with so many more rounds where you're viewed under a microscope, yeah, okay, those postseason numbers are great. Those guys never played a best of three series in the wild card or a one-game wild card or anything like that. Times were completely different. Once you arrived on that platform, all you needed to perform was in one round.
I hear you, and I get that, although there are guys like Stanton who excel, and that's the other side of the coin, is when you look at Stanton's postseason numbers and you compare him to the great Yankees of all time in October, everyone's going to say, well, he's got more rounds. So
and you don't think
it goes
Stanton,
both ways.
You don't think Stanton's benefited from Judge being right there with him 1-2 in the lineup?
I think...
Seeing the better pitches?
I think Stanton, if healthy, stands on his own as far as his career. Like, he's borderline Hall of Famer, Stanton. If he gets to certain milestones, there's an argument to put him in the Hall of Fame.
If Giancarlo Stanton doesn't win a World Series with the Yankees, close Cooperstown forever if he's a Hall of Famer.
But hold on a second. But
that's a joke.
But Stanton is also not...
I don't care about his home run. You guys had 100 RBI season with the Yankees.
But he's been one of the best postseason performers in the history of the Yankees, and that's some
in
list to be
on.
It's true. If you look at his numbers, he has had one of the best careers in October of any Yankee that has ever
lived. Last year he was great. He had the great one-game wild card. He also was garbage in the bubble and hit an injury. He hasn't had all the overall stats will be there, but take the series individually. I like
Stanton,
Big G, too.
His numbers in October will be his legacy with this team, not what he's done in the regular season.
Andrew in Middletown. Andrew, what's up?
How you doing, fellas?
What's up, Andrew? How are you?
I'm doing good. My point that I wanted to talk about was the Yankees. Now, let me preface. I'm a Mets fan, but when you guys were talking about the accountability, I think the accountability starts from the top and goes down. And I think the biggest person who's actually avoiding accountability is Cashman, because Anthony Volpe has been struggling. He's been in his own head. And instead of just biting the bullet, maybe realizing maybe he was wrong about Volpe and sending him down just to like reset mentally, the same way the Mets did with Alvarez, they continue to trot him out there and basically just make it worse.
Yeah, I agree. It's almost like they're scared to hurt him more mentally. And by doing so, nothing changes. I think it's just been a terrible way they've handled it.
Before you say anything else, we'd like to say goodbye to SNY here. Stay tuned for Baseball Night in New York, presented by Tri-State Cadillac, coming up next on SNY.
All right. We have a very important call to get to. Okay?
Okay.
We brought this up earlier. You can go back on the Odyssey app and rewind. The New York Giants and Eli Manning for the Eli Manning Show have put out a commercial and ad where he and Sean O'Hara are dining with two San Francisco Giants, and Mike Francesa walks through the halls, walks in, and goes, oh, they do get together. And it is a playoff of a classic prank call here made by a guy named Dan in Warwick. Dan in Warwick called into Sal Licata earlier and sounded, again, all we could judge on is based on the phone call, almost disinterested. Didn't seem as funny as you would expect for a guy that plays that kind of prank call.
Yeah.
And we have speculated. Did he really not think it was a prank? Is he a boring guy in real life? Dan in Warwick has fought back, and Dan in Warwick is now calling into us to explain his side. Dan, welcome in, man. The floor is yours. I criticized you, bud.
Yeah, it's fine. You guys, I found out about all this hubbub, whatever's going on, mid while I was leaving Vermont for work. I was about to get into the shower, so I didn't have long to talk.
Okay. All right, so now, hold on. Just answer a couple questions, set the scene. You're not in Vermont on vacation?
No, I go up there for work.
Okay. All right, well, that answers things, because I basically painted a picture that you have a wife or a girlfriend that has you antiquing, and you were so disinterested that it made you boring. So I was wrong on that. That's a good answer. Now, okay, now answer more.
Well, what else do you want to know?
Right, so this happens, you find out about it. I mean, does this pump you up at all and make you feel like you have the best prank call of all time?
Not really. Why?
Because they made a commercial out of it, Dan.
Well, Dan, you said you're not on social media.
What, am I in it? I'm not in it.
Well, yeah, but you're the basis of it, Dan.
Yeah,
you made a prank call so good and
what
legendary.
What does this mean? I get money or something? What, do you want to send me some money?
Jeez, well, hold on a second, Dan. Send you money. How
Dan,
about just let you own in the
moment? How about the satisfaction that you got Francesa to pay off something from 10 years ago that he'll never do things? He never puts anything over, and he put over your phone call 10 years later in a commercial with Eli Manning, I mean, that's pretty cool. I know you're not on social media, so perhaps you can't grasp that was my take, is that you don't live on social media, so you don't realize how huge this is and how many people are now being introduced to your call from 10 years ago and the whole bit itself. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, as we all thought it was. You don't seem to think that. And I hear you on the money stuff. I wish people would send me money too as well. But the idea that it should be, some things are worth more than money. This is your day to shine, because something that you did so long ago that was so brilliant has been paid off by the guy you did it to and the two teams.
How brilliant? Really? You're calling me brilliant for that call? I was just trolling Mike Francesa. I'm an 8-time consecutive class clown. I'm here for humor.
Well, you don't sound that humorous right now, Dan.
I'm
a little tired from work, but yeah.
Is it possible that Dan was trolling Sal and now he's trolling us?
Are you trolling us back, Dan?
He might be.
No, I'm not. I was legitimately about to leave Vermont.
No, I got you.
Because
I got
Vermont,
you.
And I'm but not. Regardless, but Vermont seems random too.
Like, no, but no, that's working. That's not important. But the point is now you've called back in. I don't know. I think you'd have a good laugh about it. You don't seem to think it's funny, and that's fine. But congrats on your 10-year anniversary.
Thanks, man.
All right.
Yeah.
Boy, I got to question that class. Something's up there.
He seems very upset by all
what
this.
What is going on?
There's a lot of anger,
but again,
right?
Dan has now called us twice. Not the other way around. I did not ask, or Sean, for Scones or Paulie to call him.
No, he called us.
He called us.
Just he might be going through some stuff, man. I don't know.
It's possible. It's possible. But again, he called. Like, if he is. Then
look,
don't make the call.
First of all, having to drive back and forth to Vermont seems like a pain in the ass.
I'm sure.
Whatever's going on at work.
But he's an 8-time class clown. I didn't even know they. Who votes on that?
I question the class and how funny they were.
He takes more pride in that than he does the actual Francesa call.
I can't believe the comment. By the time, I'm going to give you credit. We've busted on each other today. I thought you had a very mature response and answer. I'm talking like this with this guy. Again, he's has a classic prank call. He just called himself an 8-time class clown. But it's not adding up. He doesn't get the tit for tat on radio. Own the boat. I can't believe he's gone 0-2 on calls to the station.
He wants money for it.
Money?
Now,
when he called, when I screened him, I was like, do you realize how big this is? He's like, not really. I'm like, the Giants posted out the video. The Giants tweeted out the video. It has 1.7 million views right now.
Well, because I think
they then added the original call. They added the Dan and Warwick call, and that's got 100,000.
What I'm thinking here is that perhaps Dan is one of those people that, yeah, he called that one time. He made the prank call.
It's a different Dan than he is now.
He just went on and lived his life. It's not like
But we all did.
I know that, but working in the business and working on social media, you know the idea here, especially with Mike. There are so many accounts that live for putting his clips out, and then it's the 1-year anniversary. It's the 6-year anniversary. It's the 7.5-year anniversary.
We've gone
too far. So we live in that Mike Francesa prank call world. Dan doesn't, so he doesn't grasp how much of an impact it had.
Hold
you know
on.
What I mean?
Time
he just went
impact.
On with his life in Vermont, or on he's in vacation
Look,
in Vermont.
There have been
or on business
10 billion calls to this station.
At least. And that's just Ira and Staten Island.
Some have been funnier than others.
And Richard in Manhattan.
Perhaps Dan didn't grasp, of all the prank calls to Mike, it's a Mount Rushmore prank call to Mike.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay? But we don't spend every day the last 10 years going, please, Dan and Warwick, call back. Give us more of the Giants stuff. It's just something that kind of has been referenced in history. He's not on social media, which, by the way, red flag, too. A guy who's an 8-time class...
I don't know if it's a red flag.
Guy who's an 8-time class clown, also not on social media. I don't know.
Well,
Something's off there.
We wouldn't be on Twitter if not for
Seems like a good guy, but I would just say this. The Dan that called 10 years ago, that made that prank call, whether it was with his fraternity, with his boys, whatever, is not the same Dan that we just got there. That Dan there is pissed off that he's driving back and forth to Vermont. He's looking for money now. You know, what are they going to pay me? I don't know.
He matured.
He did. Oh, you know what? Right. He's not going to SummerSlam.
He's not doing the prank calls anymore. He doesn't seem interested in calling sports radio anymore.
But he called twice today.
I think his family and friends pressured him into calling.
I got news for you. Al's going to do an hour on this tomorrow in the warm-up show, and then G's going to do a half hour on this. So he's going to call them tomorrow, and Giannotti's going to be banging the table because he's getting nothing out of this guy.
I would say.
Am I wrong? He's going to call tomorrow, too.
He's called the midday show. He's called the afternoon show. I'm sure the morning show is going to bring up the ad and talk about it. I would advise Al or anybody else, don't pick up the phone if Dan called. He's made his case now twice. I've never seen somebody grumpier about placing a prank call they placed, by the way, in their life. 8-time class clown. All right,
We come back, we'll get you set for the night in sports, plus an interesting comment made by an interesting comedian on a podcast you should listen to. It's Evan and Tiki with Sean and Tommy here on The Fan.